Hello and welcome everybody. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening or good night, wherever you may be in the world. And welcome to the top shelf, whatever is on your shelf, whether it's books, whether it's games, it's toys, it's CDs, it's music, it's anything and everything in the world that we nerds and geeks love to have, we're talking about on this show. And today we're starting off a very, very interesting and a very special series called The Album as a Serialized Story. And I have a very, very special guest tonight, an old friend of mine. Welcome, Vivek, to the show.
Hey, thanks, Shantanu, for having me on. Also, that is an excellent description of what my shelf also will have. Although, a lot more cans on it.
A lot more cans on it. That's a good one, Vivek. We're talking about music in this series, right? And I have over here, we've always loved, you know, The Cure for many, many years and many decades, actually.
Ouch.
But this particular album is really, I love this album. It's called Disintegration by The Cure. Why do we love Disintegration so much, Vivek?
Oh, this is a great question. Actually, this is a terrible question, Shantanu, mainly because it's an excellent question that I don't have a proper answer to, and I've been trying to figure out for many, many years. But, okay, so we're talking about The Cure's Disintegration 1989. It's their eighth album, and yet was the first album I'd ever heard by them, and in all honesty, probably the last album I'll be listening to before I die. But Disintegration, to be fair, did change my approach to music, or was something radically different for me. Because prior to this, we talk about concept albums, we can talk about, you know, these big booming stories, but Disintegration made none of those claims. And yet, here's this, is it 10 tracks, is it 11 tracks? I'm sorry, you would know better. But here's this album, this innocuous album that drops, comes out of nowhere, that I don't discover until much, much later in my life. And not only is it incredibly moody and emotional, but there are so many stories. It is me learning that there are narratives unfolding, and music has narratives. I mean, and that may seem very obvious to everybody now, but the idea of something being a passive experience where you play it in the background versus engaging with this kind of emotional heartbreak that Robert Smith is going through. Or if not Robert Smith, let's be more specific. Let's be an editor about this. The character presented in Disintegration is going through, as they are, simply put, disintegrating.
Yes, and it's sort of like the 80s, right? I mean, you had a lot of this gothic rock introspective style that was established in the early 1980s, and you know, which passed on to 1989 when this album came out. How much of that gothic punk rock or post-punk style, you know, do you think, you know, was influenced by the time that we were in, or at least when this album was made? You know, because I have the original CD over here, and you know, I'm looking at the sleeve, and you know, it has a high synth.
Liner notes. You have liner notes.
It has liner notes, and you know, for those of you who are listening who don't
Blessed
know what a sleeve and a CD is, that you know, it is essentially our only source of information for the track listing. And
oh my God, I have
not in all cases, and not in all cases lyrics. So, tell me, Vivek, this CD that's in front of us right now.
So, Shantanu, I'm going to make an embarrassing interlude. How I had to get lyrics, where I would have to go to an Archie's gallery and buy one of those lyrics booklets on the hope, but because they wouldn't do an album or an artist, which in retrospect, that was such a bad financial decision. You would just buy a generic, like, hey, here's this thing. So you would get maybe one Cure track listing and a Boyzone song or an Anton Deck track, and that's how you knew. Or you had to listen to it over and over to transcribe to really get into it. The argument of maybe having lyrics display, does that make you maybe less engaging with it? That's not an argument I want to make, but personally, I do feel that.
Well, I was I was about 12 or 13 years old when I heard this, and I really didn't, it didn't matter to me whether there were any lyrics or not, because I didn't understand it. I just, you know, back in the day, we would just listen to the music and we would pretend that we knew what the people were singing, but we had no idea. And when we would read the lyrics, we wouldn't understand those lyrics.
I mean, of course we wouldn't know Heartbreak at 12 or 13. I mean, I really hope we didn't, because children, that's a felony. But there's a term in film theory that's called Stromboldian. It's a term that's fallen out of effect, and I'm sorry if this sounds weird, but it's this idea that you cannot appreciate a thing until you've experienced it yourself. I disagree with it immensely, but, you know, it varies. And so with this, and if you can talk about atmosphere, definitely, if we can talk about this narratively speaking, there's a very specific story being told. There is a story about loss, about pain. I mean, there are many ways to describe the Heroes Disintegration. No one will call it a happy album. No one's going to say it's a bop. But you will say that it is outstanding, but it is very much not a joint, a joint pleasure type of album.
I think I know what you mean, and because it was very much a product of its time, which is the 80s, which is broody. Oh, I'm going to put on some eye makeup and I'm going to gel my hair and I'm going to look like a, like some sort of a vampire almost.
Or maybe. I would argue you wanted to look the way you felt, which, you know, may have been very over the top, ridiculously sad, and you were like, my heart is the only heart that has ever been broken in this world and the next, and I will look as sad as I can be about this. I mean, or maybe not. But so even though I may not know the specifics, at the time, I immediately latched on to the mood. I immediately latched on okay, this is maybe very specific in a very strange way of explaining. It felt like watching a movie in a different language that was badly translated. And I'm sure most of us have suffered through something like this. And so maybe poignancy was lost, specificity was lost, but the overwhelming emotionality of the album came through. The overwhelming narrative, like, oh, these aren't a bunch of tracks loosely tied together that are really great or popular. You're like, no. Each of these flows into the other.
Oh, that's brilliant. That's a brilliant point, Vivek, and it's a great segue into our next into my next question, actually, which happens to be about the emotionality of this album, not very dissimilar to a great book which talks about a love story, which is essentially, to me, Disintegration is an album about heartbreak. It's an album about expressing oneself, of course, albeit under the effects of certain sorts of drugs that the frontman Robert Smith was under the influence of. But I digress.
I think in the year 2021, that's the kind of thing that may not seem as revolutionary to a lot of people, but rest assured, in 89, that was definitely a radical thing to admit, a radical thing to produce. I mean, most people remember the Beatles as pre-drugs, post-drugs.
Yeah, and the Beatles post-drugs were definitely more interesting.
An entirely different creature. An entirely different creature.
But tell me, Vivek, fascinating as this is, I want to get back to that point of what you mentioned about, you know, this being a very structured album, even if it wasn't intended to be. And it seems like this album is very much like a story, but do you really think, why do you think, because from what you've been saying, I get this sense that you feel that this album particularly is like a story.
I mean, it is a story, Shantanu. I may disagree with you on that front. It's not like, it may not be Robert Smith's story, but it is a story nonetheless. It has a structure, it has several acts, it has an A, It has a act one and act two. It has a denouement. It has an ending. I mean, it has so many things. And one of the blessed things is having a physical copy of this record to look at, because I don't think Spotify would have brought me the same joy. So the very fact that here's a record that's called Disintegration. Disintegration is also the 10th track on this album. That right? So that's like
12 tracks in the album.
12 tracks. That's like side B at the all the way at the very end. The very last track is untitled. So if you want to talk about an ending, a denouement, if you want to talk about like, but I've gotten ahead of myself. But it, what I mean when I talk about narrative, or my understanding, why this record changed that, and why we're talking about The Cure, because this came from another conversation we were having about albums that were telling stories. And you and I simultaneously went with The Cure because it was a very key point in our lives, but also perhaps our first experiences with an album trying not to cram as many things as possible, but trying to do one specific vision. And even if you don't know the individual pieces, this is an album about heartbreak. I mean, this is very specific. This is a album about the various aspects, the befores, the afters, different POVs. And it made me really appreciate production. It made me really appreciate not just production values, but as an editor, when I talk about how each track flows into another, you haven't just haphazardly thrown a bunch of tracks on here. And in the era of streaming, that's a problem. You're going to always be on shuffle. You're always going to hear one thing off of the other. But there was something about, you know, putting this on and going from something like Plain Song to Pictures of You, to getting all the way to the end. And it was telling this very protracted dissection of what it means to deal with grief, what it means to deal with loss. And I may not have had a grammatology to understand this, but I sure as shit understood that this is the story of a very specific pain, and it's one story.
Yeah, and it's what you would now call a sort of a 1980s emo album, almost. Even though I don't like calling it
that's
that.
An interesting term, right?
Yeah, like, but it is it is essentially an emo album. But you know, that doesn't mean that I'm downplaying it in any way.
Can I interrupt?
Yeah.
What are some of the new emo albums? Like, what is? I mean, when I think of that, it just means albums about emotional vulnerability. Or are we just talking about things that are telling a story? Like, I would love to hear back, because I am out of touch.
Well, to be honest, I mean, so am I. Let's face it, we're the same age. But to me, in that genre, for if I were to like quote unquote call it an emo album, I loved the XX's self-titled album from 2009, which was essentially.
Which is significantly more upbeat.
Yes, it was. But it was also very, very nostalgic album. It almost belonged to a different era and not 2009, where, you know, where the lead singer was, there were lyrics about, you know, VCRs and stuff like that. So it was a very nostalgic album. But
I made this argument earlier about, and I apologize for jumping in, and I will continue apologizing, I think, as the show goes on.
No, not at all.
So, The National, I always thought of as a very spiritual successor, not to The Cure, but to Disintegration. Like, imagine if an entire band was formed out of whole cloth off of one record. I think of them. And they had, I think before High Violet had come out, they had three records before that, or two, I think, perhaps. Boxer and Empire, I might be wrong, Shantanu, you know these things better. But one of the things, even with High Violet, is all of those tracks were outstanding. I mean, like, some of them ended up on TV shows. And yet, overall, they were telling a story. But it was very fragmented. So that, for instance, I may not call a book of stories, but yeah. I would definitely say it was a book of short stories, very thematically collected, right? Very thematically. Kanye West's Beautiful Dark Fantasy is what I think of when I think of stories. And you put a pin in that conversation because there is a lot to unpack.
There is a lot to unpack, and you know, we will be talking about The National and Kanye in future episodes. But I want to conclude, Vivek, this episode has been a fascinating discussion. I'd love to talk much more about it. But if you were to pick one song from this album, what would be your favorite song, and what would you recommend to our listeners?
Oh, that's difficult. It's like, how do you tell someone, hey, here's this book that I like, why don't you read a random chapter? But if you had to get a feel for what this album was about, or what this album was fundamentally, I think, trying to tell you, to me, it would always be Pictures of You.
Oh my God.
What about you?
Well, I have to say that Pictures of You is a natural choice for me as well. But there's so many great songs, you know. I love the drum beats of Close Down, and I love the
Spiders is scary.
Lullaby.
It is genuine. Oh my God, Lullaby.
I love Lullaby, which is the one with the spider. It's a great video. There's so many tracks on this album that make it what it is.
But if I may interject, Chandra, you know what's also fascinating about this album, right? Is we have two things happening. We have what's called a basic narrative, and we have a meta narrative taking place, where we are also aware, like, again, this is their eighth record. We are also aware by this time who they are or what their deal is. And so you're coming at this going, is this a primary or text that I'm reading?
Yeah,
or here is this, like, what we might now, in the age of the internet, call, you know, constant citations and annotations are constantly there, right? So you're not picking up something blindly. You're not saying, this is the amount of money I have in my pocket, this is what I'm buying. You are saying, well, knowing what I know, knowing the celebrity chatter, knowing what I know about your personal life, your mental health, knowing what I know about, you know, this man's current news cycle story, and this album, and watching those two fall into place, it is, I mean, like, the era of singles has robbed us of narratives, has robbed us of coming at albums as narratives, or even thinking of them as part of a greater story than just 3 minutes of, like, empathetical compatibility. Wow. Is that the phrase I want to use?
Empathetical compatibility. And with that,
I think I may have butchered it. But
I don't think you butchered it. That's a very, very nicely put original phrase, I must admit. But thank you very much for that. And I request all our listeners to please, if you find the time, listen to The Cure's Disintegration 1989, a seminal album, the eighth studio album that The Cure brought out. It's wonderful. I would recommend keeping your phones away, or at least if you're listening on the phone, keep it away and don't browse other things.
They
listen
to things on their phones now, Shantanu.
Listen to it in its entirety and listen to it as a story. With that, thank you very much, Vivek, for being on the show, and I hope you all enjoyed this new experiment on the Top Shelf, and I wish you all a very good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night, and see you next week, where we're going to be talking about The National's High Violet.
Oh my God, goosebumps, goosebumps.